Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I live, breathe, and eat football. Me love football. Me think football great.
The Rich Eisen Show.
You're that team nobody really wants to face. I mean, I had Michael Irvin on earlier, Fred Warner. I said, let's be honest, the Niners are the last team that you'd wanted to face, right? And he said, yes.
It sounds flattering.
Earlier on the show, NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport, CBS broadcaster and the voice of the Brooklyn Nets, Ian Eagle. Coming up, New York Post sports columnist Ian O'Connor. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number three of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. And hour number two, in case you're just joining us, we are going to change the game. And by that, I mean, Ian Eagle called in to the program. He's calling Bills, Patriots. It's going to be quite freezing. And we suggested maybe Kurt Warner should send him the famed shiny puffy jacket that trended.
Oh, yeah.
You tweeted about it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Pictures I texted Kurt about it.
Rich Eisen Show.
There's going to be breaking news about it coming in about 15 minutes.
Whoa.
Oh. Okay. Just we're on top of the most important stories.
Of course.
You know what I'm saying?
No other shows are doing this, Rich.
The stories that matter to the people.
Now, this guest that's joining us next is the one who kind of sparked our guest list of today, because I wanted to reach out to him the minute Joe Judge was fired. We reached out to him. And then I just knew that there'd be other coach conversations. So Ian Rappaport. And then I'm like, get Ian Eagle, just so we got an Ian and an Ian. And then everybody on the show is a guest list. It's the same name. And they also give us some very high quality information, including this New York Post columnist and a writer of many bestsellers. His next book coming out, perfect timing, called Coach K, The Rise and Reign of Mike Krzyzewski. And you can pre-order that where all books are acquired. Ian O'Connor of the New York Post joining us here on the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, Ian?
Hey, Rich. Good to be with you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. So, John Mara is chatting with the media right now. He is saying it was gut-wrenching to fire Joe Judge. I saw your piece in the New York Post in which you said that what Mara and Steve Tisch did by firing Joe Judge needed to be done. Why did you have that stance?
Ian? Well, I just got off the Zoom call with John Mara. I was a little surprised, Rich, that the back-to-back quarterback sneaks in the final game, of course, which reminded those of us old enough of the Joe Pisarcik, the famous fumble in 1978, which marked a very dark period in Giants history. He said that was just a minor factor in the decision. And so I think the post-game press conference, the 11-minute manifesto from the podium after the Chicago game, that was a factor. But it was more that once they lost their quarterback, the operation just completely unraveled. And he said, John Mara said, I thought that we had dug ourselves such a hole that there was no way out. And so if he's being honest, it was really a culmination of what happened really after Daniel Jones got hurt and they didn't have a viable backup quarterback, and the entire franchise and operation just came undone, and that was the reason. I really believe that he was – John Mara has always been a guy who looks for reasons to keep people, not fire them. And I still think Sunday he was looking for a reason to retain Joe Judge for year three. So my personal opinion is that back-to-back quarterback sneak sequence had more to do with it than maybe John – led on today.
That's what caused me to come to this microphone in this chair on Monday, Ian, and say essentially what you were writing in the New York Post. I've never seen that before. It's a surrender formation. You know, it's the exact opposite of victory formation. It's a surrender formation, and a professional football team should have a play regardless of who is at quarterback or anywhere else on the field that can convert a third down, regardless of where you are on the field. Certainly in a 3-0 game, certainly against a team in your division, certainly a team in your division that you bizarrely called out, you know, from the podium. That, to me, is just like, how does that happen? And I saw that and I thought to myself, how does this guy stay? That's the way I went with it.
That's exactly the way I went with it too, Rich. And if you recall, the Giants started a Super Bowl run from the 1-yard line on that Victor Cruz Christmas Eve 99-yard touchdown. So you can play football backed up against your own end zone. The Giants proved that 10 years ago when they won their last title. And so, yeah, the surrender, not only was it got off at the end of a 4-13 season and 5 miserable years, 7 double-figure loss seasons in the last 8, but here's a coach who, in his introductory press conference, said, every play under me will have a life of its own. We are going to attack every play with relentless spirit and be. And I remember having a conversation with him on the phone where I brought up the fact that obviously he's a disciple of Belichick and Saban. And he turned the conversation away from those two figures toward Parcells and Coughlin and said, I want to be associated with those two people for two reasons. They won championships with the Giants. That's what I want to do. And the physicality of their teams in December, weatherproof football teams, that matches up with the ethos of the New York, New Jersey region. And I want to put that product on the field. And then he did that on Sunday to those people, the 30, 40,000 who showed up, and to those who were watching. That, to me, was unforgivable. He could not coach another second for the New York Giants after he did that.
Ian O'Connor, the New York Post, here on the Rich Eisen Show. So then what is the issue? What can you put your finger on? Because, again, John Mara's dad's nickname is on the football. I mean, he's been around. He's as football of a football man as there is. He is also involved in the competition committee and a very influential owner in the National Football League. And the fact that his franchise, and I know half of it belongs to Steve Tisch as well, is sputtering like this. After Joe Judge comes after Pat Shurmur, who came after Ben McAdoo, who was allowed to bench Eli and smash that record-setting streak of consecutive starts in favor of a Jet quarterback who the city had a front row seat for his mediocrity for years. That was allowed to happen. What is the issue with the Giants, Ian O'Connor?
Well, if you go back 10 years, John Mara was considered one of the best owners in the NFL. They had won 2 championships in 5 years. And so he was asked this question today. Is it a fundamental breakdown inside the organization as far as evaluating personnel, or is it a disconnected series of bad decisions? And he said all of the above. What I'll say is this. He was a good owner when he had a good GM, a good head coach, and a good quarterback. Now he had a terrible GM who's now gone, a terrible coach who's now gone, and an injured quarterback that we're not sure about. So I think you tie it back to the 2018 draft and hanging on to Eli Manning too long. Those things are very connected. If Dave Gettleman takes Josh Allen at number 2 instead of Saquon Barkley, we're probably not having this discussion. The Giants, to me, I'm not saying they would have developed Josh Allen the way the Bills did, but they might be the 6th seed in the tournament today instead of a complete wasteland. So hanging on to Eli too long, not drafting the right quarterback in 2018, taking a running back there at number 2, and then Daniel Jones, I think he's got a lot of physical talent, but he doesn't stay on the field. And as you know, Rich, that's the most important talent for any quarterback to have. Availability, Tom Brady is the master of that, and Eli Manning, of course, was as well. So that's why the Giants are where they are.
No, I know, road to what, perdition, you know, but what about, you know, the question and answer that was asked of John Mara about at the center of all this, because there is a general manager, you know, that's going to have to be hired. And Dave Gettleman was the one who made those decisions. And that was the decision of John Mara to make. And all of the coaches that have been here, it's been positively dreadful, as we all know. What about, is there going to be a change within the organization from Mara and everything else on the way they've done everything? What was gleaned out of that conversation?
The change is that they're going outside the family for a general manager for the first time in forever. You go back to George Young, Ernie Accorsi, Jerry Reese, Dave Gettleman, that That's all in the family.
Right.
They were all giants, lifers, basically, starting with Accorsi after George Young, who was put in, of course, by Pete Rozelle. So they're now going to hire a general manager outside the organization. That's going to be the big change, and then allow that person to make the head coaching hire. Kevin Abrams, who's been in that giant franchise for more than 20 years, he was groomed to be the next in line in the succession of Giants executives to take over. They're not even giving him an interview. So that is the change. The Mara family will still be there. John said today, the GM and head coach will always make the decisions. I'll give the final okay. 99.9% of the time, unless there's an off-the-field conduct issue, I will approve as long as the GM and head coach are in agreement. And so that's the change. They're finally going to hire a general manager from another organization, probably with zero ties to the Giants. And see how it plays out from there.
Yeah, and then that guy will really just, or lady, decide who the coach is. Like, that's it. And then we'll play it like that, right? That's the way it's going to go.
Yeah, and then make the decision, too, on the quarterback.
Yeah, what's the scoop there? What do you think? I mean, obviously, he's under contract. They're going to use him next year if he's healthy. He's cleared, what, in August for contact? That's a serious neck injury the guy had. This year.
It is a serious neck injury, and you know, frankly, I've written this. So, if Russell Wilson is available, and he may not be, I would pursue that. I think the Giants have to pursue that. They have two top 10 draft picks.
Yep.
So they have draft capital. They don't have salary cap space. So the new GM is going to have to be awfully creative as far as making something like that work. I do think Daniel Jones has the athleticism, the size, and the arm to be a good NFL quarterback, but he just hasn't been able to stay healthy and put all of that together. And he doesn't seem to elevate people around him. He's had a bad roster, but nobody seems to get better around Daniel Jones. So that's a bit of a problem. And my guess is, Rich, that the new GM will come in and give Daniel Jones next year and then make his or her determination on the quarterback long term.
And what are you thinking about coaches? What are you hearing? I know you're that the general manager has to decide, but this is
right.
this is a gig that everybody keeps saying, I don't know if he'd want to do it. You just throw a blank check at Bill Cowher and go for it, you know, or somebody who's been there and done a huge splash, but also somebody who knows the league and somebody outside the family, you know, like that's the idea too, right? So what do you think?
I think if I had to place $20 on it today, I'd probably bet on Joe Shane as the general manager and Brian Daboll as the head coach. But I think Brian Flores should be the head coach. Okay, I like him a lot. I think he was, 24 and 25 in 3 years in Miami with quarterbacks who aren't as physically talented as Daniel Jones. He beat Belichick 4 times in 3 years. The relationship situation down there with the general manager and ownership, I don't cover the Dolphins, so I don't know what happened there, what went wrong. But I think Brian Flores is a really good candidate. I'm not sure the Giants are going to hire him. And, of course, it comes down to what the general manager prefers. Another person to watch here would be in Baltimore, Joe Ortiz. He is very well regarded. And even though he was the 9th general manager candidate ID'd as far as getting an interview, I think he could be a serious player in this. To me, Shane is probably the guy to beat, but Ortiz could be a serious factor here. A lot of people, he comes out of a great organization when it comes to evaluating personnel. Ozzie Newsome, DaCosta, those guys are great. So he could be a major factor as well.
What's your take on what's going on with the Nets? Just switching gears a little bit here. What's your take on their reversal of half of Kyrie's better than no Kyrie?
I didn't like it. I thought they sold a piece of their soul. I understand their rationale. I gave them a lot of credit for taking the initial stand that they took and then to kind of just throw it all away. I didn't like it. Kyrie Irving is a fabulous point guard, and watching him play is actually a treat.
Oh, it is.
I remember talking to Bob Cousy about him. Bob Cousy said he's one of the 5 best point guards he's ever seen as far as running a team. And so it is fun to watch, but I don't think it was fun to see how the Nets played that out. And I don't wish him any ill will, of course, but I would not have made that move.
And I guess last one for you here, your new book's coming out, right? On Krzyzewski.
Yeah, next month.
So walk me through how long you've been on the trail with
Yeah,
Coach
and
K.
You were kind enough to have me on, Rich, for my Belichick book. I really appreciated that.
Of course.
So it was a similar process. The difference was Bill Belichick was sort of lobbying people not to talk to me. Coach K hasn't done that, and so I appreciate that. He hasn't created those kinds of obstacles. And so it's talking to hundreds of people about a great American life and leader. And I didn't know when I started the process, of course, that he was going to announce this would be his final season. So I guess I'm glad he didn't end it after last season. Very glad. But I think they're good enough to win the whole thing. I think I'm hoping this is the most definitive, honest, accurate and fair account of his life. That's my plan. That's my hope. And I guess I'll leave it up to the readers to decide.
Yeah, because I guess that would be next up on the national media hit parade once the NFL season is concluded. It's the final 6 weeks of Coach K's coaching career and what Duke might be able to do with it by putting him on a ladder with a pair of scissors, right? I mean, like that's
just like John Wooden at the end. It would be fitting for him to go out with number six, no question about it. And the good news is they're good enough to do it. I don't know if they're the best team. I think Baylor probably is, but I saw them live against Kentucky. I've watched them on TV. They are good enough to win the whole thing. Bancaro's unbelievable. So it would be a hell of a story for them to actually pull that off.
And then how about you talk about a story, right? I mean, what if, and this was real, a few weeks ago, and you know, Mac Jones's final four games certainly has put a damper on things. But New England getting back in the playoffs with the quarterback that Belichick drafted, specifically with in mind to turn the Brady page, that is truly something. What do you think's going through his brain this week? You know,
well, first of all, Rich, I think it's really good for football and the NFL for him to be back in the tournament. With another quarterback. I think it's a really cool thing. I'm fascinated to watch how this is going to work, if they're going to be able to advance. And no, I do know that there's a number of years, and he told people, I had this in my book, that he was as great, as much as he respected Tom Brady and understood everything Brady did for Bill's legacy, that he did at some point look forward to the day where he had another quarterback to try to win with that player. Well, now he has that player. And so I think he'll be coaching for another 4 or 5 years into his 70s. He originally said he wouldn't do that, but he's a young man.
Sure is.
For his age. He's 10, 15 years younger than his age, the way he acts and carries himself. So I would be surprised if he's not still coaching Mac Jones 5 years from now.
I mean, I don't know if you can go deep into your notes, your mental notes of your interviews about Belichick. Did you ever find out at any point in time what a New Year's resolution was for him? Because we tried a couple times. Somebody tried a couple times and weren't able to get it from him. Did you see that? Did you see that one?
Yeah, I did.
After he loses to the Bills? Oh, my God.
I do give that reporter, as Tom Brady did, a lot of credit for having the nerve to ask that question after a loss. And I was a little disappointed when she asked the second time.
She did.
Give that answer. Come on, Bill. Just
because he said maybe next week, and then she did in fact return.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But
that's when I thought, come on, give the answer. Now he did. He did smile. He did smile. So you give him that. But that would have been a great opportunity for him to show something there. So I was a little disappointed he didn't come through with an answer.
Yeah. And today, I don't know. You might have been in that Zoom with John Mara. Bill showed up today with a cut off sweatshirt. That looks like it's a Top Gun sweatshirt. I don't know. It says Danger Zone on it. Ian, I don't know. Did you get anything from his history? Was he a big Top Gun fan? Do you know anything about that?
Well, I don't remember that. I don't remember hearing that. Obviously, he's a big Naval Academy guy. His father spent so many years at the Naval Academy, and he loves that place.
Okay. So there you go.
So maybe there's the connection there.
Okay. Was his father's nickname Goose? I don't know. I mean, it could be. And I guess last one for you here. In your when you're writing about Krzyzewski, do you just have his name for you to just cut and paste when you're writing? You don't write it out every single time, right?
I do, but you know what? It is the easiest name in the world to misspell, right? That third letter gets everybody. They want to go to the Y. They don't want to go to that Z after the KR.
Right.
And so I'll say this: every time I wrote it. How many times I wrote it in the book is about 160,000 words, something like that. I looked at it five times every time just to make sure.
Oh, man, I would just have it on that cut and paste thing and just hit, you know what, the alt, you know, P button and just paste it in. I wouldn't. You wrote it every time?
Boom, boom, boom.
I did. I did, and I didn't know I had that function, so I'm old school.
Do you know how to spell it right now? Like if I asked you how to spell it, you could knew it?
Oh, yeah.
Pressure on?
Yeah.
Okay.
K-R-Z-Y-Z-E-W-S-K-I. Nice. I mean, now it's easy.
You're done. Okay. That's like an eye chart. My gosh. Well done, Ian O'Connor. Thanks for the time. I appreciate it. Thanks again. Let's do this down the line.
Take care.
You got it. Everyone should pre-order that book right now. That Ian O'Connor's writing on Mike Krzyzewski, where all books are sold. So,
Coach K.
Coach K. That's it. All right. We're going to take a break. We're calling an audible here. He just said, okay. I've been asking him all morning. I don't know if I should tease it or not, but he said, okay. Let me just say.
Okay to calling in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
You don't need to tease it. Let's just go to break.
No. It's a different ball of wax.
A teasable moment?
I'll just say it. He says, okay, I think we're going to get Jeff Ross calling in.
Oh.
Talk about Bobby Sags.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Let's see if we can do that. If not, then we'll just take your phone calls. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Don't go anywhere. We're back here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
844-204-RICH, number to dial back here on the Rich Eisen Show. I do this way too often with this man. He was kind enough to call in after the passing of Norm Macdonald, and I love this guy like a brother. One of the sweetest men on the planet, just like Bob Saget. He's the roast master general here to call into the show to talk about the passing of Bob. He is the great Jeffrey Ross. How are you, Jeffrey?
Oh, you know, I'm doing as best as possible, my friend. Doing as best as possible.
I know. And
a lot of late nights, a lot of crying.
I bet. You know, and that's why I reached out. I'll be honest with you, as always, so many great ideas that they start with Susie, my wife, you know, Suze. And she's just like, you should reach out to Jeffrey. Maybe he wants to talk about him. Maybe that would be helpful, therapeutic, or whatever. You should have him on. And that's when I texted you. I'm like, okay. So I didn't want to bother, but I just figured maybe you wanted to talk about Bob, and
yeah,
I'll give you the floor, you know?
Thanks, homie. It took a few days for me to even gather my thoughts because it's like losing a brother, and I never had another brother. And he provided this incredible safety net in my life. Bob was an expert on comedy, but also life. And death and taxes and you know, if you needed a doctor, you needed a lawyer, you called Bob. And if you needed advice or you needed a pastrami sandwich after a breakup in the middle of the night, he came and he did that. And to not have him is going to be really, it's going to be awful. It really is.
When
and he would have loved the outpouring.
Mm.
He would have loved this.
When did you first meet him, Jeffrey? When did you first meet Bob?
You know, it's a little vague because I can. We always try to remember, and it was probably passing in the hallways at the comedy clubs. But I think it was the Aristocrats movie that really brought us together. The documentary probably made about 15 years ago, mm-hmm. And it had a lot of funny comedians doing the same dirty joke. And Bob had the dirtiest version of this old aristocrat's joke. And for whatever reason, him and I were sitting next to each other at the premiere in New York, and we would just start heckling our friend Robin Bronk from the Creative Coalition, and he'd whisper things in my ear to say that he was too afraid to say, or I would whisper things in his ear, and we'd just start being this funny little heckling, like the two old guys from the Muppet Show, you know? And the whole movie was dirty, so we were dirty heckling, and we really came together as comedians and first, and as I got to know the guy. You know, it's interesting. He was this global TV star, mm-hmm. but he passed away in a hotel room by himself on the road like a true comic, which, you know, it sounds sad as you say it, but if you think about it, it's probably how a lot of entertainers, including myself, might want to go. Mm. He did a two-hour show standing O. I mean, who the hell does a two-hour show? But Bob loved to talk. And when he had a great crowd, and, you know, these pandemic-era crowds are just the best of my career. And Bob was feeling that, too. We talked about it. People were so grateful to have live entertainment. When you take something away, then you bring it back. They really appreciate it. And he delivered this amazing performance. And then he got in his car, and he drove another couple hours to his next gig for the next day. And he called Kelly, and he posted about his show, and he just died. He just died right there in that bed, tucked in with the lights out. Hopefully he didn't suffer too much. Somebody had to knock this Betty White off the internet finally.
So you're too much.
This no good punk Betty White had to be taken off the internet finally.
The Roast Master General Jeffrey Ross here on the Rich Eisen Show. So let's talk about the Saget roast. Some great moments from that I've been going down like a YouTube wormhole over the last few days. What was that like, Jeffrey?
The Saget. You said roast. The roast. I didn't hear.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, the Saget roast from back in the
you
day.
You know, I've been at Bob's house the last couple of nights. You know, with his fan, with his wife and the full house cast and John Mayer and our friend Mike Binder. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see all the people that he worked with over the years and just being in the, and they're still laughing about, you know, all the millions of shows they did together. And I was really distraught. I was really sad. And I drove home two nights ago about midnight, and my cousin Ed was here at my house waiting on me, taking care of my pup. And he had the Bob Saget roast all queued up on a projector in my living room. So we were giant life-size. Bob Saget was sitting on his throne in my living room when I came home. Mm-hmm. And it was great. You know, it was like watching, you know, the thing about that roast, Rich, which I know you'll appreciate, was it wasn't all just like a celebrity roast. It was a comedy roast. He had comedians around him, John Lovitz and Jeff Garlin and Susie Essman and me. And he had his best friend, John Stamos, as the roast master. And I walked in just as Cloris Leachman walked on stage and said, "I'm not here to roast Bob Saget. I'm here to bump a bunch on Stamos." And the whole crowd went crazy. And, you know, she was sexy and funny, and a lot of the jokes probably wouldn't fly today. And she said, she looked around the day, and she really was the shining star of the show, because it was all comics, Gilbert Gottfried and me. And Cloris Leachman, she smacked herself in the head and said, "Somebody hit me in the head so I could see some stars." And I remember Norm MacDonald and Cloris. You know, Norm did that wonderful set where he did these like corny jokes, and Bob is just dying. And, you know, you look at Bob, whether he was a 19-year-old on the Rodney Dangerfield HBO specials or a 65-year-old running around the comedy circuit, he really kind of looked the same. Like, I'm aging at rapid speed, but somehow Bob, who, you know, loved his martinis and cigars, looked great his entire life. Like, it's just unimaginable that you wouldn't just see that guy laughing, that laugh. And one of my favorite jokes in that roast was at the end of my set, you know, Bob, the Aristocrats was still kind of riding high in the cultural zeitgeist. And Bob was really embracing his dirty daddy persona. He was being super hilarious and in his stand-up, and he just released a special where he was pretty raunchy. And I said, you know, Bob, if you noticed, I didn't curse once during my show tonight. I didn't want to compete with the master. But I would like to leave you, you know, in honor of the late, great George Carlin, who had just passed away, I said, I'd like to leave you all with another seven words you'll never hear on television. And the Emmy goes to Bob Saget. And he fell out of his chair laughing. And we had this running joke, Rich. We had this running joke for years that he was going to prove me wrong, that he was going to win an Emmy. And, you know, I always hoped he would prove me wrong. And all I can hope is that somehow, you know, he gets that Emmy in the sky somehow, because he really was the most wonderful, talented. He loved comedians. He loved people. He respected people. You know, I saw a lot of my female colleagues talking about how much he respected women and loved working with women. And I go to his house, and, you know, Jody and Candace and Lori and all the girls, the twins, they all just love him so much. He took this fake TV family and he made it his real family.
He did. He did. And he had a beautiful family on his own. And my wife loved Bob Saget. She is so brokenhearted right now, Jeffrey. And because she met him first before meeting me, and, you know, and just his sweetness, his niceness, his love of people and making them laugh. But the thing I want to point out here, you haven't seen, we have this photograph of you and Bob together that we've shown a couple times, and I want to show it one more time. It's in front of the drop and the step and repeat drop behind you, and it has the Scleroderma Research Foundation symbol on it, because that's great. What he was really all about too, because his sister died of this awful disease called scleroderma, and right. And he would get you, and I mean, name it, and he would call people up and say, I need you here, and what can you give me to auction off, you know, what can you give me, what can I get, what can we do to raise money, and you come here and do a set in front of, like, you know, 400 people in a ballroom. And everyone would come because it was Bob asking, you know?
And he never asked for anything
ever.
Other than that.
Correct.
That was the ask. And I don't care if you were Robin Williams. I don't care if you're, you know, the biggest star on the planet. He had Josh Groban. He had John Mayer. He had Jimmy Kimmel. You know, he had his buddies like us do those auctions. And I always said, like, you didn't really ever know Bob until you saw him host one of those scleroderma shows,
right?
Because that's when it all came out. That's when you saw this vulnerable mensch with crying in front of his friends and family about his sister. And, you know, I'm not even superstitious, Rich, but Bob's daughter, Aubrey, was telling me, you know, Bob had two sisters who passed away young. And both tragically, only one from scleroderma and one another way. And interestingly enough, that Bob and his sister that passed away from scleroderma both died on the same day, which happened to be the first sister's birthday. So the whole thing had this strange cosmic flip to it in Bob's life. He experienced way too much tragedy. And somehow his daughters, they kind of have this funny disposition and they have this sense of humor. And they're great laughers. And Bob would always bring his daughters to the Comedy Store or the Comedy Cellar in New York. And they have that, you know, they have that smile and that sagittism, sense of humor. And I think he imparted it on a lot of us too. Like you said, I heard you say earlier how you felt comfortable doing, at midnight standing next to him. He really did help me relax. He was everybody's rabbi.
Yeah. I felt that. What do you think he and Rickles are doing right now?
Complaining. Why is it me? Why, Bob, of all the people that could come up here, it had to be you. I'm not done roasting Betty White yet, and now you're here. Anyway.
It's great, right? I love you, Jeffrey Ross.
I know what Bob's doing. He's at the Pearly Gates name dropping. He's tipping the valet. I know that.
I love you, Jeffrey Ross. We'll chat in the next couple of days, brother. Thanks,
Rich,
for doing this.
I love your tribute. I love you so much.
Thank
buddy.
You.
And thank you for, you know, keeping his memory so just
always
out there.
Always. You, always. Take care. Right. You be well. That's Bye. Jeffrey Ross, the Roastmaster General. He's just the best, man. Somebody had to knock Betty White off the page.
Oh, that punk Betty White.
Punk Betty White, says Jeffrey Ross.
And that was a clean version of what he
I know.
tweeted out.
That's a great Cloris Leachman line. Somebody hit me on the head so I can see some stars.
I'm just here to bleep John
Stamos. Oh, my gosh. Keep laughing from crying. We'll take a break, finish up the show with some phone calls, set up the rest of the week.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Back here in the Rich Eisen Show. Hey, Joe Montana, Cool Under Pressure. Check it out right here on Peacock. It tells the story of, yes, Joe Cool. Joe Montana. 6-part documentary series now. Streaming now exclusively on Peacock. Go to peacocktv.com to sign up. I saw it. It's pretty good. I fast-forwarded through the Notre Dame part. You still get all the good stuff.
Wow.
I watched Rudy again. Brockman, twice in a week, Rich.
Oh, my God.
Is Joe Montana still...
Spoiler alert, he makes the sack. Whatever.
Brockman, is Montana still not on your...
What's Mount Rushmore? What's less... No, stop it. Don't bring that up. Let's promote it. Let's carp on Notre Dame. Prefer to do that.
You were saying what's less, and you stopped.
No, you know what's less impressive, Rudy against the sacking somebody against the fifth stringers, or Dak thrown for 5 touchdowns against the third stringers of the Eagles last week?
I'm a big Charles Dutton guy.
He
was
thrown for 4 against the starters. So
okay. Andrew in Washington's been held on for almost 2 hours here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, Rich and the guys. How are y'all?
Thanks for hanging
Andrew,
on. Appreciate
up?
That.
What up, though?
Hey, no problem. It's hard to follow the old grand roast master.
Yeah, it's all good.
Bob Saget.
What's on your mind? Well, at least you're on hold with an interesting conversation, hopefully, to keep you on hold. So that's good.
Oh, yeah. Great interview today. I think because I'm on today, I need to be – my name needs to be Andrew. Or
no, it's okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, you're exempt.
Hey. TJ, nice blacked out Jordan today. Don't know, but are you ready for the Jordan Retro 4 Crimson drop in just a few days?
Yeah, I don't have my hopes up. You know, I it's hard to get these things, man.
Well, walk me through. Hold on, man. What's going on?
Well, there's an app. It's called a Sneakers app.
Sneakers app.
And you go to this app whenever Nike does a drop, And then you just have to fight against a million people and 2 million bots to try to obtain these sneakers.
Oh, is that right?
It's brutal. Man, it's brutal.
Usually you hear this.
Is that,
yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, you know.
Oh, okay. So well, what else is on your mind?
Well, you know, just to kind of bring it back to the sports aspect, I know after the last interview, but
do it. Go,
I just had some coaching carousel questions for you.
Go for it.
You brought up Matt Rhule. I think he's an excellent coach, excellent person. I think he'll do great in Carolina. Maybe just need to reset an actual quarterback. I mean, the Cam Newton experiment, that's what it was an experiment. Other than that, what is your opinion on the what's the best opening right now?
Huh. Best opening right now. Man, there's so much, you know, and I was going to do this the last segment with all that real estate, but I did get a text from Jeff Ross saying, let's do it. I'm going to go deeper into this tomorrow, but right now, I mean, because there's so much that goes on from ownership to is a quarterback there already? Do you have to mold your concept of success to another general manager that's already there? Because there's so many pluses and minuses. Oh, man. Mm-hmm. I don't have, because I would lean towards Jacksonville because they've got the best quarterback. But, you know, unless you're willing to mold yourself to whatever Trent Baalke wants to do, because he's sitting there. And the crazy thing is he just joined the organization in a year. So I would want to have a situation where I like the owner and I love the quarterback and I can bring in my own personnel person and set the stage.
Absolutely. So,
and I don't know if that exists right now. I be, you know, Denver, but their ownership is changing.
Right.
Thanks for the Raiders interesting have the chat. Best Thank you for the call. Huh?
The Raiders have the best quarterback.
But the job may not be open.
But it's still an open job.
Right.
If they get blown out by Cincinnati.
I mean, the Raiders are the only playoff team looking for a coach.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be it. Obviously, Vegas and new stadium.
But again, the personnel guy is going to remain in place.
I don't know about that.
So
I don't know that, but I trust Mike immensely in terms of his skills to change a culture and pick the players, you know. Honestly, honestly,
look at Russell Wilson. I mean, the Giants would be the number one spot.
That I get. Who else do you have? There's nothing else there. It's terrible.
Your wide receivers are talented.
You just they are. I mean,
you don't think Kenny Galladay and Kadarius Toney are talented?
If I'm not mistaken,
I know they didn't catch a touchdown pass, but
the guy who caught the touchdown pass from Tom Kennedy for the Lions had more touchdown catches than Kenny Galladay this year.
I know.
Did he score?
No, I think they had zero.
I mean, you spend all that money on a guy who doesn't score?
And a first-round pick didn't score.
You know, obviously you could say you got Galladay, you got Tony, you got, you know,
Saquon, Shepard. Evan Ingram, you got some good players.
I need more time to think about this. We got a whole bunch of real estate tomorrow.
And whoever gets Deshaun Watson.
I don't know what's going on with him at all.
I'm sure he's going to play next year.
Why?
What do you mean why? Why not? He just sat out a whole year. That's a quasi-suspension.
Yeah, but he still has to clear his docket. When's that going to happen? When's that going to happen? What if there are some people who won't settle? Or he's the one who doesn't want to settle because the terms are something he doesn't want to do.
I would be shocked if he sat out another season. Wouldn't you?
I was shocked he sat out this one. I was shocked he sat out this one, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, you can't say anything's for certain in this league, ever. Everyone's like, well, Deshaun Watson's going to get traded. You know, yeah, the Texans would be willing to trade him now. Who's willing to take him on? When's he going to clear that docket? How has this thing not been cleared up yet?
I have no idea.
Why hasn't it been cleared up yet?
I think the why is the big question.
Mike in Brooklyn, New York. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Rich, what's up? I loved your quote that pretty much summed up the Colts season. The Colts went from the team nobody wanted to see in the playoffs to the one that we're not going to see in the playoffs.
Pretty much.
Priceless. I loved it.
And when I tweeted that out, I know people are like, what a burn. Oh, snap. I wasn't trying to be, you know, trolling or anything like that. The reason why I said that was not to, you know, burn the Colts. Like, that's not what I do for a living.
Maybe not, but they deserve it. They deserve everything. I like the Jacksonville Jaguars getting them to Hard Knock Life, and they put up something like Hard Knocks, the final, season finale or something.
Man. I hear you. What's on your mind?
So, yeah, this is my take. You're plugged into the NFL, so, you know, this is my assessment of it. I like Chris Ballard. I think he could be a great GM. He's got talent on the team.
Yes.
You know, they put talent. Frank Reich, I think, could be a great head coach. He's got a lot of issues that he's got to address, game management and other things. But one thing about Frank Reich is he is a great quarterback coach. I think everybody in the NFL would say he might be the best. And every quarterback that he's worked with, you know, Jacoby Brissett, Rivers, Foles, Wentz, he's gotten the best out of them. The problem is with Carson Wentz, he's hit his ceiling on it. This Carson Wentz is who he is. He's not going to get any better. This is it. He has major flaws. He's slightly better than Jacoby Brissett, but he has made same problems that Brissett has. He has flaws in his game. He's indecisive. He's a horrible decision maker. Nuances to the pass. He doesn't throw with accuracy. He doesn't throw with anticipation. He's not going to get any better than he is right now.
I get it. And then we will see, you know, what the Colts will do. I appreciate the call. Thank you for the call. Call back. I bet you Wentz is going to be back. Everyone, you know, Wentz is going to be back. Baker's going to be back. Daniel Jones is going to be back. The one who might not be back, I mean, I shouldn't say that because everybody handled. But Jimmy G, that's going to be an interesting one right there. And another quarterback situation that nobody's talking about yet because we're still living in the present because of what the past has meant is Big Ben. What are the Steelers going to do at that spot? Because I don't know if they're going to go Kenny Pickett and just say, that's the guy. We're going to go local in the first round of a draft, choose a quarterback.
Because it's high on my damn agenda.
It will be.
I'd rather have Jimmy G than any five of those guys.
Well, I think he'll be available. But he's got the Dallas Cowboys first. Let's go. We'll talk about that tomorrow and so much more. J.J. Watt's on tomorrow's program. You should be too. We'll take you to Brother from Another on NBC Sports on Peacock.